Have I told you recently about our good friends at Game Time? Here's the deal. Go to your smartphone. Go to your iPad. Download a little app called Game Time, the fastest growing ticketing app in America. You can go to any event, sporting events, college or pro, concerts, comedy shows. Just download that Game Time app. You want to go to a Giants game? Bob Melvin back in the Bay Area. Matt Chapman, Blake Snell, they've loaded up the squad. If you want to go watch the Giants play, Steph Curry making a little playoff run. Concerts all summer long. Want to go watch something at Chase Center? Want to go watch something wherever you live? A concert, get outside, enjoy yourself. Use the promo code HAM for $20 off. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code HAM for your first purchase for $20 off your first pair of tickets.
Middlecoff!
Happy Hames!
Happy New Year!
Happy 2020, guy. Happy 2020.
2020. Yes, sir.
Let's hope to make it to 2040.
2021. I'm just aiming for 2021 at this point, John.
Do you think the 20 years in the 2000s went by pretty quick?
Yeah, lots happened, but Y2K was just yesterday.
I do feel like a lot's happened. It's been a crazy 20. Yeah, I'm with you. Just try to make it to 2021. Just keep on trucking.
Before we get into it on this New Year's Day podcast, we got to tell you this podcast is brought to you by Upstart. Hitting the gym, eating right, learning a new skill. These are all things you could do to better yourself in the new year. But I can't think of something more important than starting off the new year by tackling high-interest credit card debt. Our friends at Upstart.com/ham are here to help.
Yeah, I love our friends at Upstart.com/ham. Upstart, they go beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education, your job history. Inform, it's just to get a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score, and obviously we believe that too, guy, here on this podcast with our listeners. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds, guy, the next business day. We're all, you know, you got credit card debt, those high interest rates, you want to get rid of them, it gives you anxiety. I know it does with me. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards and meet their financial goals. We all make goals. 2020 or 2020, we want to attain those. We are here to help you. Let us help you with our friends at Upstart.com/ham.
That's right. Upstart.com/ham.
See why
300 businesses on Trustpilot. They are number one in their category. Yep. So hurry to Upstart.com/ham to find out how low your rate is. Only takes a few minutes. Upstart.com/ham.
Whoop, whoop.
Podcast also brought to you by, also in 2020, hoping for continued success with the advertisers. Brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Promo code HAM in the numeral 1. That's HAM1. MyBookie.ag, HAM1. They'll match your first deposit 50% up to $1,000 if you'd like. You know what I like? I love Alabama. I think it's 7.5 now.
It's going up. It's going up. So, I can't bet against them, man. Because that would be ugly. And I'm just praying. But that does feel like the lock of the day tomorrow. What's the Oregon line? Have you seen that?
I think it's Wisconsin 3 was the last thing I saw. I don't have my bookie in front of me right now, though.
Yeah, one thing I pulled up is my bookie does a great job of these futures. And mybookie.ag, promo code HAM in the number 1, is I got the Super Bowl futures, guy. We have four teams that are single-digit favorites, you know, under 10-1 to win the Super Bowl. Obviously, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are the number one overall seed at basically 2.25, you know, plus 225. The 49ers, you can get them at plus 375. So you bet $100, you win $375. You bet $1,000. If you like them to win the Super Bowl, guy, I'll give you sneaky decent odds here are the Chiefs at plus 425, the Saints plus 450. This has to be to start the playoffs. The longest odds the Patriots have seen in a long, long time, guy. They are 10-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
10-1 to win the Super Bowl. The one thing you'd say about the Saints at plus 450, unlike the Chiefs, 49ers, and Ravens, that's not great odds for a team that has to win three games and potentially two road games just to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're just being viewed, as rightfully so, as a good team, but the Niners, Chiefs, and Ravens path is just much more obtainable, given that they get home games and they get a bye.
MyBookie.ag, promo code HAM1.
Let's get it on, baby.
All right, we're going to talk some Niners, some Raiders today, but we thought new year, you know, there's just a lot going on. You had the Black Monday, already two turnovers watching the game. This ASU-Florida State game, there have been two turnovers in a minute and 15 seconds, so obviously we're recording this on Tuesday. A fumble and then an interception in the baby zone, John, a baby zone INT. That should be everybody's resolution in 2020. No baby zone interceptions.
Was it Jaden Daniels or Chris Winkie that threw it?
It was Jameis Winston.
What I don't understand, and we mentioned this before the game, if you would have asked me just at the beginning of this morning when I got up, what do you think? I did not know Arizona State was playing Florida State. If you just said, what do you think Florida State's record was this season? I would have guessed 3-9. I mean, they fired their coach 3 weeks into the season.
I know.
And somehow they ended up going 6-6. Probably if you broke down their schedule, it speaks to the shittiness of that conference, right?
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, the idea that ASU and Florida State only had one game different. If Florida State wins the game, they'll finish with the same record. By the time you listen to this, you know if they won the game or not. That doesn't. You wouldn't know that based on the conversations around the two
programs.
Well,
Arizona State had some good wins. I mean, they beat Cal at Cal, which was an 8-win team. Now, granted, the quarterback got hurt that game. And obviously, they beat Oregon. Those are two pretty strong wins.
Well, and they won at Michigan State.
Was Michigan State pretty bad, though?
Well, but I mean, at the time, yeah. I think it was a top 25 win.
On the road, Big Ten, it's a tough
place
to
win. Two true freshman offensive linemen, two freshman quarterback.
It feels like the eye test, Arizona State should have two more wins, right?
Well, I know.
They did have a bad loss to Colorado. Was that the call? They
that
lose
was
Colorado?
That was a great game, though, but it was, yeah.
Did home. You call that game?
No. No, but it was a good game. All right, John, let's dive in here because there's a lot to get to. He is back, Middlecoff. He is back. Jack Del Rio is going to be Ron Rivera's defensive coordinator in Washington.
That's a lot of, like, guys. I mean, you're talking about a couple football guys getting screamed at. That is, they're going to fucking shake some heads there, right? I think Jack, you and me, we were hard on him, like a lot of people were. His time in Oakland has aged pretty fucking well, has it not?
But, you know, I was thinking about this today. We were also pretty good to him. When they were, like, when you get Haberman and Middlecoff, you get people that are good to you when you're good and criticize you when you're bad. It's really a simple formula.
And I think even when he was bad, we said he did bring a lot to the table. Just a grown man, at worst an average coach, which is something they died for at that period of time. And a guy that just made some fucking people uncomfortable. And I think Ron Rivera is a higher level version of that. That you would say, you know what? The Washington Redskins have been a place where people have got a little too comfortable. It's going to get uncomfortable there immediately. Ron's not messing around. I mean, he went and got Jack. Now, the question was not going to be like their defense and toughness with Ron, right? When his good teams in Carolina. Because I was thinking back, Silver wrote this article about Rivera, and Rivera said, you know, one of the most touching calls I got was the day after or last week or sometime when he had been fired from Belichick, who just called him. And I was thinking, if Belichick didn't respect this guy, no chance he calls him. I don't think he's just doing him a solid to call him. I bet Bill, who's probably played him a couple times over the years when Ron was there, went, that guy's team was fucking tough. Hell, I mean, if we look back, maybe he beat him with Cam. Who knows? But I bet Bill left and like, I respect that guy. And I think Ron, and same for Jack, like they are old school tough MFers. I don't know why I just edited myself, but.
Yeah, because you've been doing terrestrial radio for 3 days.
I would say the one thing that they're going to have to adapt to a little bit is I think Jack, maybe not Ron as much, but can live a little in the past with the style of defenses and the style of players. Look who they were. Both of those guys are 6'3", 6'4", middle linebacker types. You know, it's like you need more of the Greenlaw types in 2020, which I don't know how they would think anything other. You just turn on tape around the league. It's clear what's playing and what's not. But that would be my only red flag. Are these guys open-minded enough Because I don't know if you saw that Dan Snyder relieved every single human of his duties in that organization.
I did see that. So Bruce Allen, the decade gone.
You would say that Jack is going to have, if that's his first hire, him, Ron's going to, those guys are going to be on the same page of what they're looking for, right?
Right.
Like, Jack's going to have some pull in that, with that draft and the players that they keep.
It's interesting, too, man. There's just, it's the number of young quarter, first-round quarterbacks who are having their coach change on them in a short amount of time. Happened with Darnold. It's happening with Baker. It's happening with Haskins. Somebody else. Well, I guess it happened with Rosen, but that doesn't really count because he changed teams. There's one other guy. Anyway, but, like, that whole dynamic is just
Dax,
the Giants.
Dax, relatively young. He's
but
changed.
I'm talking, yeah, yeah, that's
you're
true
talking
too.
Like first or second year.
Yeah, but and Daniel Jones is the other one now.
It is kind of normal though. Like it happened with Elway, happened with Peyton. You know, I think it just happens with young quarterbacks because usually, I think if we did a quote unquote study, that's what analytic guys always like. We did a study.
No, John,
we
not analytic guys, computer guys,
computer guys. I think if we did a study. Most young quarterbacks are just bad when they're young. So what happens when you're bad when you're young? You're going to lose a lot of games. What does losing a lot of games mean? The coach usually gets fired. It's just kind of a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why did Jason Garrett survive Dak's first 4 years? Well, they were winning some games. It was like not really quick. Dak came in and boom, they started winning, right? It was, I think when you look around the players or the coaches that kind of survive with a young guy, they usually hit the ground running. Like, oh, Pagano and Luck. It was like, woof. Shot off like a rocket ship. So, yeah, that is a good point. Is Dwayne Haskins going to be good? I have a hard time seeing it. And this is actually maybe where Ron Rivera, Harbaugh was like this too, but he was an offensive guy, but he thought like a Rivera Harbaugh. I think Ron goes, yeah, I'll fucking figure out a way to win with this guy. Or if not, we'll just get rid of him in a couple of years. We'll just prove that he's not good enough and we'll get rid of him.
That's
the
point, yeah.
I don't think Ron looks at Dwayne Haskins. I don't think he looks at anything like he was scared. It's actually a good quality to have. I think Jack on a version of that had that when he came to the Raiders. Like, we'll fucking figure it out.
Well, when you're like, why would this guy take that job? Like, why would he? Because he thinks he can win. Like, why would Clay want to keep subjecting himself to this hassle at USC? Well, because it pays well. But he thinks he can win. He's a top 25 team. He's been to the Rose Bowl.
Well, I wouldn't compare Clay to these guys.
No,
like,
I'm not comparing Clay to that guy. I'm saying every guy from the outside, it's so easy. Like, why would he do that? Well, because he thinks he can win. Well, what? What gives him the right? Because he believes in himself. That's why.
But I would say, like, with Ron, who probably could have picked a couple different jobs, he generally, like, to his core, believes it. Like, I'm going to win. I win.
With defense, right? I'm going to win. So,
like,
to your point.
Yeah, like when we'll get to Robert Saleh or Greg Roman or Matt LaFleur last year, did he truly deep down, like, can I do this? Like, he has to have that thought. I don't think that thought crosses Ron's mind.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
I think Ron comes, and we know it doesn't cross Jack's mind either. They're coming in, double shotguns loaded. It might be a little, not false, like bravado or confidence, but maybe just a little overconfident. I think they're coming in overconfident, though.
Which,
you might argue
you have to be overconfident to win in some of these places.
Yeah, you just come in, guns blazing, let it rip. If Ron Rivera can make the playoffs multiple times in the next half decade, it's an incredible accomplishment in that franchise, right?
Yeah. By the way, how about Paul DePodesta trying to pull the Howie Roseman, John? If you had asked me, is Paul DePodesta still in the Browns building, I would have said, I don't know.
Wouldn't
but
you
the answer
say
is
the
yes, because John now he wants John Dorsey out.
Wouldn't you say, though, the major difference when Howie came back, he had a 15 years of negotiating contracts, doing trades, doing shit. Paul DePodesta is known to me for two moves. And the number one move is saying, going on record, Carson Wentz would not be a top 20 quarterback. Not like a top 5 quarterback, or we didn't think he was going to be a future Hall of Famer, a top 20 quarterback. That's one of the dumbest comments that's ever been said publicly by a guy that, let's face it, probably should never be an NFL general manager. The other non-comment, but move that he made was trading out for Deshaun Watson when they traded. Remember, they were pick 10. The Texans came up and took Deshaun Watson. It sure looks like he's going to be the general manager again, which is just nuts. But it's clearly where it's headed.
Even though you have a desperate need for a quarterback, you have to resist the temptation of taking the guy because you have a need if you don't believe he's one of those 20 guys at the end. I think it's the hardest part, maintaining your discipline because you have the need. That's what we did this year. So not only is he not top 20 quarterback, but let's give ourselves some credit here for maintaining discipline. It all comes down to the individual evaluation, and we will not always be right on those types of things.
Did he, am I missing the quote where he says, we don't think he's going to be top 20?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I said you have to resist the temptation of taking the guy because you have a need if you don't believe he's one of those 20 guys at the end of the day.
I mean, geez Louise. John Dorsey now, guy, fired by the Chiefs when they were winning, then fired by the Browns after 2 years of just doing some crazy shit. Does he, like, his run of being a general manager is over. It's his, I mean, he had two pretty good, you were the general manager for Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes, and you got fired. Then you get the Browns job, which, not great, but you get the job after you go 0-16. You get the number one pick in a quarterback draft, and you got all these assets because of Sashi, and you're out a year later. That GM job was way better than the head coaching job a year ago, right? Or the year that they took Baker with all the picks,
oh,
the quarterbacks.
Yeah. But it also, you got to have a lot of talks with Browns ownership.
But I'm just saying, from just a football perspective, having the number one pick in a draft with four or five quarterbacks, you have all these picks. Remember, they didn't just take Baker. They took Denzel Ward a couple picks later. Like, he kind of swung and missed. Like, imagine if he just would have gone, like, Baker or Sam and, like, McGlinchey. Like, not even out-thought the room, right? Just got a couple solids. And he's like, oh, you know, we're in pretty good shape. Took a midget corner that's questionably not that good. It's tough when you get two really high picks. It's like, well, the Raiders with Cleveland Farrell, the Niners with Solomon Thomas. It's just hard to shake that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an opportunity missed.
Doug Marrone's back.
I guess NBC Diana swung and a miss on that one.
Yeah, ESPN Diana now. 100% was going to be – or no, she said he's fired, and then the cons came out and said 100% not true. And that's another one where it's like, oh, Dave Caldwell's still the GM, and they're just not going to fill Tom Coughlin's position.
Is there a chance that Tom Coughlin really was that big of a meddler slash and, you know, problem for them?
I guess they have to save money on that position because they just had to pay out like $1.5 million in back ordered fines. But yeah, there is a chance of that, John. Like, he loved. Well, who was the person that pounded the table for Leonard Fournette? Was it Dave Caldwell or?
Don't you think it's difficult in Tom's position, having been a head coach, having so much juice, and then being in this position where you can't actually influence players? Like, when you're a general manager, it truly is like an executive position. You're not in complete. You're just making moves that impact other people.
But he wasn't supposed to be the general manager.
No, he was above the guy, though.
So, No, I mean, I totally agree with you. But I'm just saying, do you blame a, like you like to say, like, do you, what do you say? Like, you blame a tiger for attacking a mongoose or whatever? I mean, do you blame a fat guy because he eats an extra piece of pizza? Do you blame Tom Coughlin because he micromanages football operations if you put him in charge of football operations?
No, that was on the cons who admitted their mistake by relieving him of those duties. It just got more out of control than, Bruce Allen got to the point where it's Trent Williams saying that he's withholding money and faking injuries, and other guys are saying this other stuff.
Oh, that's right. Like, they fired the trainer, too. The head trainer, like 17 years.
The Redskins did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
So maybe they get him back. One other piece of news. So Dylan Moses, great linebacker, right? Like, if he was healthy from Alabama, how high do you think he would have been drafted?
I'll be honest, I hadn't, like, quote-unquote, studied him, but he was one of those guys that was just openly talked about by people in the business, like a top 10 pick. I think he tore his ACL in spring practice, or maybe it was fall camp. But yeah, it was like a Devin White, you know, a guy that was just going to be the number one linebacker in the class.
So he comes back, and then Alabama's official Twitter account on the 31st tweets out this little sequence of dominoes falling, and when you it took me, I couldn't figure it out. I had to text our friend Michael Sachs, who's an Alabama guy. I'm like, I don't understand this. What's going on? He's like, well, because he's deep in the Alabama message boards. He's like, well, if you look at the dominoes, it goes 1-3, 1-3, 13 for Tua. And so people are saying that the next domino is going to be that Tua is going to announce that he's not going in the NFL draft. And then he's coming back to school. And then there was like some other part of it too.
Are they the heavy favorites if he returns and he can play?
Yeah, and then I guess what Sack said is that some
Nick's
other fans
like, I'm back, motherfuckers.
Were saying that there's also the number 6 and the number 11, which means Devontae Smith and Henry Ruggs are both coming back. So it's deep in the domino Illuminati for Alabama. But you're right. I mean, if they come back with him, it is a collision course with Clemson.
Well, Guy, if Tua comes back and Ruggs and who was the other guy you said?
Devontae Smith.
Devontae Smith's going to come back as if they get both those two guys out and they lose Waddle and Judy. So, yeah, I mean, Alabama's feeling themselves right now. They think it's a chance, and I don't blame them because if they come back, it's national championship or at least right there for it. I think just Tua, looking at Tua, if you're Tua and you go, you know I'm not going to be able to get checked off by the time the combine comes around, and I'm going to fall to between 20 and 30, you could look at it two ways. One, I'm going to get drafted by a good team. Right? In theory, I guess bad teams trade up too, so it's not, you never know.
Right, but maybe I end up in the Patriots.
Maybe I could easily end up on a playoff team, like a Mahomes, Deshaun Watson did a couple years ago. But the counter to that is I lose a lot of money, right? There's a big difference between being a top 2 or 3 pick, which I think he would then. More than likely, I think Burrow's become just the lock number one overall pick. I don't see how Tua, if he was just purely healthy and he had just finished out the season throwing touchdowns, and let's say they had beat Auburn, they'd been in the national championship, or not that maybe not won the game, but like lost to LSU again, that he's a lock to go number two. Like, I don't think there's any way that Herbert goes above him if he's just fully healthy throwing touchdowns.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's $30-plus million.
Yeah, so last year, 1, 2, and 3 were $30 million. 20, 21, and 22 was $11 million, 11 and a half, 11 and change. So that's a $20 million difference, basically, between the top three and
I've never been in the position where, like, I had potentially missing of $20 million. I don't know how I'd look. Maybe you just strictly think about the money. Maybe you're not thinking. I don't know if at 21, 22 years old, you're worried enough about, like, let's break down the rosters, the organizational flow charts of all the I don't even think you're thinking
go
like
there
that.
And win. And because here's the thing, John, you go there and win, that means in 4 or 5 years you make your money back, right?
If you go there,
like if I go to New England, they trade up and get me, or maybe they don't have to trade up, and I'm at 22, it's like, yeah, I'm down $20 million to start, but I got a better chance to succeed, and I'll make my money back because I'm such a good player. But it's going to take you 4 years to get that next contract.
But it's going to take you 4 years. You're saying, oh, to make your money?
Yeah, if you're saying, well, I'll make more money in the future because I just got a better start to my career. It's like, yeah, but that you're still 4 years out where you're $20 million down.
Because I think like Andrew Luck would tell you, if you're good, you get drafted one, or Cam, you get drafted one or two, and then 4 years later, you get another huge contract. So you get that $100 million after you already got that $20 or $30 million, you're at $130 million. Where you can get that $100 million in four, but you only got the $11, that's an extra million. So again, you're going to be super rich no matter what. I think you look at it, you just want to be a super high pick. Yeah. That's how you're looking at it if you're Tua. My gut knows, I know nothing beside the domino thing, which I didn't even realize was that. But he did mention something. I think at like the Heisman Trophy ceremony or with an Alabama reporter like a month ago, that it's on, like, everything's on the table. I kind of hope he returns.
I do too. Then you'd have him, Trevor Lawrence, top of the draft next year would be great. Penei Sewell.
Yeah, Penei Sewell.
Justin Fields.
He's pretty good. I mean, I'm sure Ohio State has some guys. Yeah, there'd be some players. There's a dude at Penn State, number 11, that's going to be a super high pick.
Any other? I mean, we got the bowl games. We talk about the. We can just.
Just on Justin Herbert.
Let's just talk about that game, yeah, specifically.
There is clearly a number one overall player right now at quarterback, Joe Burrow. Who is the second quarterback? I think most people you talk about would say Justin Herbert, but I think it's more just that's where it just kind of feels right now. Physically, he's the guy. He can make the flash plays. Better version, way better version in college of what Josh Allen was. Some questions about his personality, not in a character standpoint, but like he's got a little Mariota to him. Is that fair? Just kind of quiet.
Yeah, I think he's kind of not a natural vocal type guy, but I think he's come out of his shell a little.
Not an alpha's alpha. But you wouldn't call him a beta. But I think Mariota, the people that questioned his alphaness, were they proven right?
Well, I mean, is his personality the reason he's not the starting quarterback? Yeah, I think it's more that.
Justin Herbert
that he's not good enough. Not that it's his personality.
Well, that's his biggest red flag right now. If Justin Herbert comes out, wouldn't you say, and throws 3 or 4 touchdowns against Wisconsin, a team with NFL players, an NFL defense, and an NFL level defensive coordinator in Jim Leonard, the former safety, would he solidify himself as the number 2 overall pick? I guess Chase Young, like Rivera and Jack. Probably
Young, I think it's probably number 3 is the first pick that's kind of open. But you're right. I mean, it could be as simple as somebody. It could be like the Solomon Thomas pick, right? Somebody moves back a spot, so someone else can take the quarterback they want to take Chase Young at 3.
Well, like Detroit could trade back like 5 or 6 spots for a couple picks because they got Stafford coming back, and then if like whatever team gets there to 2-3. Do a flip-flop, right?
Who's at 2 right now? Washington? No.
Washington, then Detroit. You know Detroit won 3 games?
With 1 tie? With the Cardinals tie?
Yeah, they went 3-12-1. But all you get remembered for, you don't get remembered for the 12-1, you just get remembered for the 3, right? Like, you're like, wow, we actually didn't lose the 13th game. Like, yeah, no one cares. You could argue
3-12.
That tie... You guys were up, I remember it was week 1, like 24-6, and they came storming back. I guess Stafford, I saw some clip that he was adamant that because it's like someone in the media asked him, what do you have to say to the fans that are worried about your back injury? He's like, well, I'm not worried about the back injury, and it's my back, so tell them that. That was a pretty good answer. Root for Matt.
That is a good answer. He's been through a lot in his life, though, so level of worry is different than everyone else's level of worry.
100%.
So look, man, I'm with you on Herbert. Big-time stage. That game's at 2 o'clock. Wisconsin's favored. Rose Bowl, I think for them, I think a lot of the 4 years at Oregon was like, this guy's talented enough to leave after 3. Is he really going to go pro after 3 years? And we never have really fulfilled kind of the promise of what we thought his career would be. But now it's all there in front of him, and this can really just all come together where he's got this – it's not the CFP. That would have been perfect. There is going to be – I'm looking forward to this. Who's the guy in Milwaukee, John, who does all the draft things?
Bob McGinn.
Yeah, Bob McGinn. Are there going to be a few GMs that like Herbert more than Joe Burrow just based on his arm, physical traits, quote unquote?
Maybe. It's not inconceivable. For example, was Josh Allen the number 1 quarterback on the Bills board the year they took him at 7? There's a chance, right?
There's a chance, yeah. Only I'd takes
say actually,
one.
I actually say maybe a decent chance when you factor in the weather, how cold it is, how you need a big arm guy there. Like, the Bengals, I say with the Bengals worry, but Joe Burrow has a better arm than Dalton, and they drafted Dalton once upon a time, and that he's been a 10-year starter for him.
And I also think sometimes with these picks, like, and I don't know how it, you really what percentage it is, but what pick can you make that you like that also no one is going to crush you for going with Joe Burrow number 1 overall if you're the Bengals, right?
I think it's just, it's a no-brainer.
Like, no one will say in 5 years if Herbert turns out to be the better player. How did you not know that?
Is
like,
Herbert a senior or a redshirt junior?
He's a true senior. He started as a freshman.
Oh. So he has no eligibility left, even if he has to go.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. He started as a true freshman, like, game 1? Or did he come in, like, mid-season?
No, I think it was game 1.
Damn.
I think. I go back and check that, but...
So he's had a pretty pretty long career as a starter.
Just battled. You know, he didn't play a ton his first couple years because he got beat. He had some injuries.
Oh, yeah. That's why I think of him like, God, he's really played that long, but you're right. He's been knocked out of a couple seasons. Would you say his career is a better version of Rosen's just because he's won a little more? But both of them, like, left something to be desired. Like, why don't they have multiple, like, 6-game seasons?
Yeah, I think if they win the Rose Bowl, then Oregon will say, you know what, when it's all said and done, we are at peace with the Justin Herbert era, for sure.
May the peace be with you.
May the peace,
Justin Herbert,
be with you.
You're right, because his first 2 games he played a total, or first 2 years he played a total of 16 games. And he was having really productive seasons. God, you're right. God, I didn't realize. I felt like he was like a 2.5 year starter, but fuck, he was the injuries. What were the injuries?
Well, he had a clavicle. I remember was one of the main ones.
Broken clavicle.
Yeah, he got like one of those tackled on his shoulder things, and I think maybe like the shoulder came back again. I don't quite remember.
See, this is you would get peppered at a scout meeting. You're like, well.
I'd be more prepared for a scout meeting in terms of injury history. I know. Dee Podesta's looking at me.
Shut up, Paul.
Where did you come from? How long have you been in the building this whole time? You've been listening to what I've been saying?
Who are you?
You think
Paul?
Him and John Dorsey have had some good meetings, productive meetings, a little give and a take? I see you make a good point there, Paul. No, you made a good point, John.
Productive, no chance.
What is the Jimmy Haslam you think has like on his text message thread? There's always like one from Dorsey, there's one from Dee Podesta, and he's always got to be careful which guy he texts back because they're both talking shit about the other one.
I think the key when I see that the Browns sign their emails or their announcements with Jimmy and D is I would try to get in deep, not actually deep, but just on a personal level with Dee Haslam. Because if you're with the guy's wife, you know, who does the husband talk to the most? His wife. So if she's on your side, you got a chance.
Well, I saw she likes Josh McDaniels. But before we go, so real quick, we'll get to the Browns again in a second as it relates to Robert Saleh. So 10 a.m. is Michigan-Alabama. Michigan, by the way, John, if you're scoring at home, has lost its last three bowl games. Michigan lost the Peach Bowl to Florida last year. 41-15.
It was bad. It was ugly.
They lost.
Do bowl games matter though? Still for perception, because they kind of do. They feel like they don't, but then they kind of do.
Well, so here's what I think about. I'll tell you this, and then then they lost to South Carolina the year before by a touchdown, and they lost by one the year before that to Florida State. I don't think individual bowl games by and large matter because there's so much context that you know who's got guys that aren't playing. You know what I mean? Like, there's all this kind of a weird dynamic. How many of your coordinators have been fired, or how many of them just left, or is your new head coach there? All that weird shit. But I do think we can stack up over the course of several years, right? Like, Harbaugh's 1-3 in bowl. He's lost three bowls in a row.
Yeah, this would be a big moment for him. This would be a good win. Whether Tua or, obviously Tua's not playing, but I forget the backup's name. But he actually threw 3 or 4 touchdowns in that Auburn game.
If Michigan wins this game, I will be flabbergasted and kind of pleased.
Yeah, I would too.
Also, if Michigan wins this game, John, it will be 4 out of 5 years that they've won 10 games under Jim Harbaugh. So say what you want about him.
This would be his best moment as Michigan head coach, beating Nick Saban by a mile, right? In the five years, this would be his highlight.
Yeah, Lloyd Carr had 6 total double-digit win seasons. This would be Jim's 4th.
I don't give a shit after Feinbaum saying they didn't care, and that's fine. Jim needs them not to care. Just
backup quarterback, it doesn't matter.
It does not
because
matter.
All of that stuff applies if they beat you too. Like, oh, Alabama with a backup and barely caring.
100%. Win the game. So we actually, you're right, it's a sneaky while till the national championship game. Like, it's not next Monday. It's in a Monday from Monday.
It's on the 13th, yeah. It's 2 weeks. So, and then the other game tomorrow, Sugar Bowl Monday night, New Year's night, Georgia-Baylor, 5:45.
Wednesday night,
Georgia-Baylor in the Sugar. Oh, and by the way, Outback at the same time as the Michigan-Alabama game is Minnesota-Auburn. So
that's not bad.
Good slate of games on Monday. Georgia favored by 4 against Baylor. Auburn favored by 7 against Minnesota.
I saw that Derrick Brown, their defensive lineman that's supposed to go in the top 10 at Auburn, is going to play. Number 5. He's a freak.
Wow. I like
it. I don't know why he is playing. He shouldn't play, but too risky.
All right, John. The Browns are – maybe someone can refresh my memory. This has been a thing. I have not seen so many reports. I remember seeing the bottom line Monday, and it said Browns, .. Josh McDaniels accepts. I'm like, what in the... An interview. I was like, oh, okay. It's news when someone just agrees to sit down with them. Pretty crazy. And obviously, Robert Saleh, Mike McDaniel, Mike LaFleur. Niners staff is stacked with guys that are going to be getting phone calls from teams.
Well, to me, I think it's pretty clear that the Browns, you want to let people know that the top guys on the market are interviewing with you. Because it became a story when Matt Rhule, Mike Lombardi wrote or tweeted that Matt Rhule will not interview with them. So there's a negative perception around them that you got to shake. And that's where you and I were talking yesterday. If you're Robert Saleh, do you 100% just interview with the Browns? And you get to the point where, you know, an interview, like anything in life, it's probably do something that make you a little uncomfortable. Do something that you've never done before. Put yourself into a position where you can learn from, even if this is a job that you wouldn't want. It doesn't hurt. Now, we talked before the podcast, like, how realistic is it Robert Saleh getting a job? And I think it went from a month ago to be like, this guy's going to get some legitimate shots. And now, you know, probably well under 50-50, right? It felt like maybe 50-50, there's going to be seven, eight jobs, the guy's going to get a head job. And now there's really, what, five jobs open right now? The Redskins are closed. Carolina open, Cleveland open, the Giants open. The Cowboys, which won't be an option for Robert Saleh, right?
Right.
So it'd be the Panthers, which it does feel like Tepper is going to go big game hunting in the sense that a guy with some experience, like a McCarthy, go after a big-time college coach. Same with the Giants. Like does Robert Saleh feel like the New York Giants? The Browns, to me, would be his one option just because a lot of guys might turn them down. Like, one thing that you're going to have to do if you're the Browns head coach, you're going to have to talk with Paul DePodesta. Like, if John Dorsey goes, that means this guy's going to play a big fucking role. It's not inconceivable that when the dust settles, Robert Saleh is like a top two or three candidate for him. Just because who's Robert Saleh going to want? Well, who do all the analytical guys want in baseball? Someone that makes not that much money that answers to them. That's what Paul DePodesta's dream is. That's what all baseball guys' dream is, to pull all the strings. That's why baseball is being run by a bunch of farons. And I don't blame them. We all want more power. It just doesn't work like that in football. That I don't think it's inconceivable that if you told me that Robert Saleh is offered the Browns job after just one of the shittiest searches ever. That's what it would probably take, is a bunch of people saying no. Which, would you agree that is not inconceivable at the rate it kind of is going again? I mean, they ended up with Freddie Kitchens last year. It was hard for them to get interviews last year when it was like, well, we got Baker, we got all these assets, we got a good young core.
John, Robert Saleh would be viewed as a better hire than Freddie Kitchens was.
100%. I don't even think it would be close. Now, I think the flip side, if you have any sort of common sense, can you hire a defensive coach that's never been a head coach when you just drafted a quarterback number one overall and he had a shitty season? I saw someone tweet, 31st in quarterback ranking, second in picks, 31st in some other completion percentage. Like, Baker's stats this year were horrendous. I mean, it was like a Mike Glennon type. I mean, I think everyone's like thinks Mitch Trubisky's some bum. And he's not a great player, but Mitch's season was dramatically better than Baker's. Baker's season was terrible, guy. Quantifiable with the analytics, the eye test, everything. It was bad.
The eye test was pretty appalling, really. I watched
the eye test was appalling.
Some highlights.
Yeah, it was bad.
Not a lot, but
can you hire a defensive coach when Baker Mayfield was the number one overall pick 2 years ago as a quarterback who's kind of slipping in the wrong direction? Even if you're Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, look,
is there a chance Jimmy doesn't like him?
Yes, they can hire a defensive coach, I think. The standard should be hire the best coach. But, you know, I don't know if that's what they will do. The question always also is, well, who's your offensive coordinator? I mean, it can work. Like, there's no reason why it can't work. It's just there, you just have no room for error. So I understand why you're Robert Saleh if you would interview for that job. I mean, the question is, too, like, what would he go down and sit down and be in a position to say, if I get this job, I'm bringing Mike McDaniel with me. He's going to be my offensive coordinator.
Well, I think they would want that because you'd want Mike McDaniel with them. Then I get back to, you remember when Saban and Belichick were talking in that documentary and they were both kind of getting mad about like people stealing their coaches?
Said, I put you on the Saban was more mad about it though, right?
Saban was way more mad. And Bill just kind of went along with it. I think Bill agreed. He's just smart enough to not, like, he doesn't like to create stories. I think Bill's smart about that. Like, Nick doesn't give a shit. where Bill doesn't want it out there. Like, that would be a headline if Bill said, if Bill had said, when Patricia went and tried to take these three guys, I lost my shit. That would have been the number one story the next day after that documentary, right? Pro Football, like, I just think Bill's smart about that, though it drives him nuts. Because he doesn't talk to, guy, he refused to talk to Bill O'Brien. He hates Eric Mangini. Like, the guys that stole his guys, you know, Brian Flores, it feels like they have a good relationship, but he took a bunch of guys. I wonder if you're Kyle.
He gave him Chad O'Shea back, though.
It does feel like, did he just fire Chad O'Shea? Because Bill's like, oh, I'm going to need this guy back because Josh is about to leave.
Chan Gailey.
Can Kyle get mad when McDaniels is not even calling the plays? That'd be my question.
Let's just say this. Can you get mad about it? Now, the thing, to your point on Kyle, be like, it's not like Mike McDaniel was nobody. He was my guy.
Well, here's, you know, something people don't know about him. He had an alcohol problem.
Right.
He was an alcoholic. And Kyle stood by him. The Atlanta Falcons stood by him. And he changed his life.
Wasn't there a big story about that?
A couple years ago. I think it was during the Super Bowl. I have a hard time, like, Mike McDaniel doesn't call the plays. So
yeah, this is, and Mike McDaniel, if you're, like, he's never going to call the plays.
Ever. That's
to
not
ascend, he's got to go somewhere else. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what serves the Niners really well, is it's Kyle that is the guy that will then be replacing coaches. Him. You don't have to replace you will never have to replace your offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I think that 100% helps. But everything I've heard is this guy's a genius guy. This guy helps.
Well, like, run game coordinator. Look at their run game. Pretty good on the resume.
There's a reason they like this guy around.
You could argue whether or not Robert Saleh gets a job that he should be hired as somebody's offensive coordinator, right?
I think you would be well, they blocked him last year. Oh, they blocked LaFleur's brother. But LaFleur was going to call the plays.
So he was going to have the same position in Green Bay.
But I think you can block him for similar positions. I think the only position you can't block in the NFL is to interview for head coach. If you guys are under contract, you can block. It's an asshole move, but
you can
do
block
it.
Wide receiver coach becoming OC?
Fuck yeah. If he's under contract, I think you can. It's happened before. I mean, technically it happened last year. They didn't ask what they wanted to interview Matt LaFleur's brother for.
Yeah, but I thought he was not going to be the OC in Green Bay. I thought that's why they blocked him.
I think they just blocked him because they just didn't want to lose him.
I thought if you were getting a promotion, you could not get blocked.
I think it's only head coach. I'd have to double check on that, but I think you can block for anything if you're under contract for quote unquote, you know. Linear, I guess it wouldn't be linear. It would be horizontal type move, even though you're going to have more responsibility. That was my understanding. And that the Niners have done that before. Belichick's done, a lot of teams do it. And that's why it's a dickhead. People get mad about it because it's kind of fucked up.
I guess
up.
That is what it is.
But yeah, the Niners' greatest strength is whether they lose Saleh, whether they lose some of these guys. No matter what, they got the head coach to call in place. Sean Payton's lost a lot of guys over the years and been fine. Andy Reid's been losing guys his whole career. Keeps on chucking. Right? Calling a side of the ball and being one of the best at it in the league is Kyle's, besides like all the, he clearly brings a lot to the table, but his genius as a play caller, to me, makes it easier whenever you read. Because the reality, right, whether they lose guys this year or this, if this train doesn't stop moving in the right direction, like they just win for the next 3 or 4 years, he's going to lose coaches. That is guaranteed. That's inevitable, guy. Like, it really is insane what Clemson's doing. They're the only college or NFL team that has been consistently kicking ass and basically lost nobody. For the first time in my memory, they lost a guy this year. He went to, like, the USF head coach. But they have basically lost nobody. Like, oh, think about this. Ryan Day, one season, Ryan Day is the head coach. Hires Halfley, who Habermann Middlecoff may have judged as this guy's going to get fired. And it turns out 3 years later, he's a head coach. As his defensive coordinator. And the dude's a head coach a year later. It's like most times you win, guys leave. Think how many guys Pete Carroll's lost over the years. Yeah. Coordinator.
If you're not good, right, I mean, this the good guys handle it, the bad guys don't. We think Kyle's a good guy in terms of being able to coach. The other great thing about being an offensive play caller is you do probably have a pretty good sense for what makes a good defensive coach.
The one thing I'd say, though, Guy, is I guess the question with Kyle is his success as an offensive coordinator has come with McDaniels and LaFleur's brother by his side in Atlanta and then in San Francisco. I'm not saying he's dependent on those guys, but and I don't know if McDaniels was, but LaFleur, I know the older LaFleur was with them, like, and McVay. Like, he's had pretty unreal staffs in Washington, Atlanta, and then here with these little minions that are geniuses.
There's no S, it's just McDaniel.
Mike McDaniel. But think about who he had in Washington, right? He had Sean McVay doing, you know, quality control work.
Maybe Kyle makes them.
Maybe that's true, and that's the
maybe
hope.
Maybe it's they're learning from Kyle. That's why they become great.
That's what he'd say. Great. Well, if I can find McVay, McDaniel, LaFleur's, we'll find them.
Yeah.
Time
I got confidence
tell.
In him.
I do too.
I mean, you think it's a pretty good? That'd be a pretty good DC job. I'll tell you that.
Well, I think it'd be a good job. All these jobs would be good. Like, I would just want to be on Kyle's staff, wouldn't you? You'd be like, well, fuck. It took McVay 3 years. He went from, you know, quality control to tight end to coordinator to head coach. You just start rising. You want to be associated with these guys, McVay or Kyle? Clearly, I'd jump on that bus. They'd say it the must bus, right? For in Arkansas, I'd call it the Kyle bus.
Yeah, do you understand what that means?
Yeah, the must bus, just like the train's rolling, we're just winning.
But why is it must bus?
Just a
guy's name, Mus?
Eric Musselman.
Oh, the basketball team. That's right.
Yeah, I think they're really good again.
He drove around in a golf cart, giving students rides to class like the first day of school.
This year?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't actually driving it. He was just like sitting in it was like a 3-row golf cart. He was in the second row, and he would just pull up, be like, need a ride to class? And then he'd give people T-shirts for Arkansas basketball.
He wins. I'll give him that.
All right. I at this moment in time, do you think Robert Saleh is the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns?
I would lean no, but I by no means think that it's not a serious option. Just because
because odds are whoever they hire, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Like, what are the chances? Like, they just Marvin Lewis or Mike McCarthy? Like, no. I could see their final.
Would Mike McCarthy be a bad hire?
No, but are they going to hire Mike McCarthy?
He's getting into the analytics.
I could see them being in the final three.
All right, John, before we move on, let's tell the people this podcast brought to you by Ease.com and EaseWellness.com. Promo code is HAM.
Guy, I love our friends at Ease.com. Promo code HAM. Pre-rolls, vapes, you name it. Go check it out. You go to Ease.com. You can search away. You can look for anything you want, whether it's vapes, whether it's edibles, whether it's pre-rolls, whether it's you name it, they got it. And then our friends at EaseWellness.com. They got CBD, best CBD in the business, drop shipment, comes to your house. Ease.com is basically Uber Eats of cannabis. EaseWellness.com is basically the Amazon of CBD. So get on it, Ease.com, check it out. Get on it. Promo code HAM.
Promo code HAM. $20 off the first order if you've already used the promo code. You know, find another way to have your air quotes first order or just share the promo code. We appreciate it. No doubt about it. Go get it. Okay, John, the Raiders are gone. Kind of, except they're not gone. Derek Carr said after the game, what did he say? It's just time for maybe a breath of fresh air or to get some fresh air, change of air.
I need a breath of fresh air. I need some fresh air.
Vegas is kind of stuffy.
That's what I was thinking.
Air is much fresher at Napa.
I agree.
And maybe he does need a breath of fresh air. I mean, if I'm not even being funny here, maybe that means another organization, though, not this organization. I don't know, but man, that is a weird one. Had meetings, feels good about where things are going. I kind of feel like the way you feel about Mitchell Trubisky, where they said Ryan Pace said Mitchell's going to be back. It's like, well, I mean, you got two teams that are going to be drafting in areas where they're going to have the ability to get to quarterbacks if they want to. I won't feel safe about Derek's the quarterback of the Raiders until the draft's over, at least.
Well, how do you think he'd handle, let's say they don't sign any veteran guys, and they trade up. They do an Andy Reid type move, and they go get their Mahomes. Herbert. Who are the other quarterbacks beside Herbert and Burrow?
Well, there's really – if Tua – so Tua, and then after that, the lit – like Mel Kiper – you know who's fourth on Mel Kiper's big board? Is Jacob Eason at UW. So him, Jordan Love at Utah
State. Okay, let's just use this hypothetical.
Jordan Love.
You stay at 19, and you take Jacob Eason at 19.
So
what would Derek do?
No thank you, by the way.
But I'm just saying, like, what if that happens, guy?
Yeah. What choice would he have? I mean, and if I were him, I'd be like, I can beat this guy out.
Well, of course that he's going to say that, but he will not.
But, I mean, I would think that.
It would make some animosity in the building, right?
For sure.
It happens all the time. They said Mike Glennon was a starting quarterback. They draft Mitch Trubisky. They said Sam Bradford was a quarterback. They draft Carson Wentz.
But the difference with those guys is those guys were not like historic career that team guy, right? It was less emotional if you're Mike Glennon. You just signed like the other day.
Well, right? I think there's two ways to look at the quote, like you said, historic. He does own now all like the Raiders records. Now, a big element to owning all the Raiders records is, besides Stabler, most of their quarterbacks have been shitty. Like Plunkett's, check his numbers, not great. Rich Gannon's time was just short-lived because he got there in his early, you know, like 32 or 33, and by 37, 38, he was hurt. So he had a four-year run or whatever with Gruden, and then that 1 year with Callahan. But how about the Dubow stat? And this, it's not quarterbacks, it's not a win-loss, it's not their record, but it kind of is. The only quarterback that has more losses through his first 6 years as a starter is his brother. Like, that's not really a list you want to be on. I get a lot of DMs from Raider fans, like, what do you think? Is Derek going to be on this team? I just say 50-50. I won't be shocked if he is. And I could easily see the scenario where they take a guy, maybe even in the second, I don't know if they have a second round, they got a couple third round picks, maybe they trade up and get a Jordan Love or someone like that. If they take a guy in the first 2 days, that's a pretty big story for Derek, right?
Huge.
But I just can't discount Rivers and Brady. If they sign, let's just do a hypothetical. I don't know when the league year officially starts. Let's just say March 10th is the date. March 11th, story comes out. John Gruden and Mike Mayock are flying. Phillip Rivers has not been tagged as free agent. Are flying to meet with Phillip Rivers. Are having a sit down with Phillip Rivers. What's the story? Well, if they sign Phillip Rivers, is Derek going to get traded or cut? Because it's one of the two, right?
Cut. I mean, yeah, traded. Sure. Yeah. Not
but
back.
Like, he would be not on the, if Phillip Rivers signs a contract, let's say 1 year, $30 million, Derek is not on the team by the time the draft comes, correct?
Right.
What about, like, to me, where it gets a little, like, would they sign Andy Dalton? The thing people cannot forget that when you're going, well, Derek's better than these guys. John Gruden signed how many quarterbacks last year of just random names? He kept doing it with the Kaiser, Glennon, and McCarron, and Peterman. So if he's going to sign those guys, why wouldn't he sign a Dalton if he can get his hands on them?
Mariota?
Yeah.
Trade for Nick Foles? I'm just saying, like...
Yeah, these are names.
You think he likes DeShone Kizer? Well, I guess Mariota might have more money available to him.
Yeah, I think that the Foles one's not crazy. To me, the Andy Dalton one would just be in the mix. That would be one. Could you keep Andy Dalton with Derek and just have him compete?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Why would Andy Dalton look at Derek like he couldn't beat him out? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What percentage would you put that Derek Carr is a starting quarterback week one, 2020? Vegas or Oakland? They're one fire or earthquake away from that thing getting delayed and them having to stay.
Why does it feel like you would enjoy that?
I don't care. Mike Norvell's on my screen. What's his nickname? Bubble Screen Mike?
Bubble Screen King?
Bubble Screen King.
According to Kerry Crowley? Yeah, I mean, I think 50-50 is the answer. I mean, if you had to say 51-49, then which one's 51 and which one's 49, I'd say 51 is he is the Raiders quarterback just because, you know, quarterbacks are just hard to come by, even though we think we see paths to multiple quarterbacks for the Raiders this year.
The stats are pretty unique, though, about guys this long, one franchise, just do not last. When
you just
got to
get another guy. That's the thing. You just got to get another guy.
Well, he kind of tried, and they were all just shitty.
Brady, you just got to get another guy. So I lean 51-49 just by nature of it's just getting quarterbacks is hard.
What if he signs Brady and Derek's a backup? You just can't invest that much money into one position.
Well, what if Brady signs for $2 million?
You're telling
and
me.
Like, and like the deed to the Palms Hotel. If Derek, you're the state of Las Vegas and Sheldon Adelson, you don't...
You wouldn't even hesitate doing that.
I mean, did you... I'm trying to figure out what's going on my TV, and I realized Danielson and Nestler are wearing tiger print ties because it's the Tony the Tiger Bowl. Like, why are these guys wearing tiger print ties?
CBS is just so stiff with their jackets. Yeah, what is Tony the Tiger? I don't even know what that is.
Well, Frosted Flakes.
Is that, so Frosted Flakes did this or no?
Yeah.
Tony the Tiger did.
Well, it's the Tony the Tiger Bowl, but it's Frosted, I mean, I don't, maybe they've pivoted their marketing, but it's Frosted Flakes. Unless Tony the Tiger is something else that's not Frosted Flakes, and I didn't know that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't get any credit for Frosted Flakes when everyone's just calling Tony the Tiger when the youth doesn't even know who Tony the Tiger is. Like, we knew Tony the Tiger because they had commercials. You just saw Tony the Tiger. If it was Frosted Flakes,
I just
I
think
don't
it's
know.
A cool logo. If you use the Tony the Tiger face, you call it the Tony the Tiger Bowl.
I don't know if anyone. I don't know if Tony the Tiger. Maybe he went independent. I don't know if 100% still with Frosted Flakes. I haven't seen Frosted Flakes anywhere.
So we talked to Brent Jones on Thursday, got my weeks all thrown away. On Monday, on KNBR, terrestrial radio tour. And he's doing a number of things. I mean, he's on with them every week. He's also got this thing coming up in Walnut Creek on January 16th, which you can find out about at letterstoeighty7.com, which is the Mayoko book, big panel Mayoko's hosting.
Steve Young's going to be there.
Steve Young and Brent Jones will be there. And I think he might say 87.com in this interview, but it's letters to 87.com is the website.
Gotcha. You know that he played at Santa Clara?
I did, yeah.
Isn't it kind of crazy, like Santa Clara, St. Mary's, the Long Beach States, the Riversides, like all these programs that are just small schools in California had football, and really the only two small schools that have like legitimate football that kind of produce an NFL guy here and there are kind of Cal Poly and UC Davis that are not like Nevada or Fresno State, you know, like legitimately small schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like none of those schools have football anymore.
Right.
Pacific.
Bakersfield.
It's kind of sad.
I know.
We just have a bunch
San
of
San Francisco
like,
used to have a football program.
Middlecoff types flying around. It gave a lot of people a chance out on the West Coast.
A lot of Kerry Crawleys out there.
Yeah, just play a little ball.
There, when you start looking at basketball teams, it's outrageous. You're like, you start to realize when you start getting into like NAIA and D2, it's like there are a million college basketball players playing at a place that they'll be at your local gym. Like, you play college ball? Like, yeah, I played in this D2. Dude hits like 7 threes in your pickup game. You never heard of the school he went to.
Well, I remember when I was at Cal Poly, our schedule, non-conference, looked for all those schools. It'd be like, oh, we're playing Notre Dame. No, Notre Dame, Demure,
Nazarene.
Yeah. Oh, we're playing, you know, you're just playing all these schools you've never heard of. And then you watch them, you're like, well, this guy is way better than anyone I know at basketball. I went to a couple of those games. Like, that. Some of these guys can hoop.
Here, your NAIA top 25 right now, John. Georgetown is number one.
Yeah, not that Georgetown.
Georgetown, Kentucky's number one. The Masters College, I've heard of them.
I have not.
Mid-American Christian is ranked third in the nation. Pikeville is fourth. Let's see. Wayland Baptist is ninth. John Brown, 10th. Lewis and Clark State, you've heard of them.
I've never heard any of these fucking people. I've heard
16th
of
in the nation, John. Tougaloo.
Where
Tougaloo
is that?
College in Mississippi. Tougaloo. That is my NAIA team, is Tougaloo.
I like
the
NAIA.
Official NAIA basketball team of the Haberman Middlecoff podcast. All right. Brent Jones, our conversation with Brent. Here it is. By the way, you know, Matt Mayoko was on with us earlier. He wanted us to mention, and we're happy to pass this along. Coming up on January 16th at 7:30, a special star-studded evening at the Lesher Center for the Arts, presented by Diablo Regional Arts Association. A look back on the legacy of The Catch and the Niners in the Bay Area, Steve Young, Brent Jones, Eric Wright, Dwight Hicks, and a panel moderated by Matt Maiocco. That's January 16th at 7:30. Guy Haberman and John Middlecoff in for Tolbert, Kruger, and Brooks. And it's great to have, as he is every week with the guys, the great Brent Jones. Hello, Brent.
Fellas, man, it's great to have some depth of football knowledge on the show with you guys. And so it's I'll love getting into it. But you mentioned the Dwight Clark night at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, and it's January 16th. And I don't know if we've ever done anything like this before, kind of at a big venue, event place, and it's going to be pretty special. Just sharing memories about Dwight, the impact that he had on the 49ers dynasty with the catch, and also just that unbreakable bond he had with the fans. And so we're going to have a couple of guys that were there from the get-go of his career, Dwight Hicks and Eric Wright. And then I'm going to be there with Steve Young as well. And Matt Maiocco just wrote this unbelievable book about Letters to 87 and put it together with Dwight's knowledge and insights about fans sharing their stories about where they were with the catch and all and the impact that that had on their life. And so it's going to be a very, very special night. And I'm sure we'll get into this season's team as well, how this current team is carrying that torch that Dwight lit almost 40 years ago. So pretty darn special deal, and thrilled to be a part of it.
Well, as a Walnut Creek resident, I might have to see if Maiocco can hook it up with some tickets and swing by.
That's the way to go, guys.
Sorry, Brent. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm flabbergasted after watching that game. I mean, it was just, I thought the Saints game was going to be the best regular season Niner game I saw. And I was expecting a good game, but when they completed that last pass, when Russell Wilson threw that ball, I thought that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Greenlaw made that tackle and something that I hadn't heard, I don't know if I heard it on the broadcast or if I heard it after the game because I was in a state of euphoria, but the defensive players are taught at the goal line to tackle high, and it makes sense to me because obviously if you tackle low, the guy's forward momentum is going to – he's going to fall into the end zone, and so is the ball. And so to tackle high, you keep the shoulder, the arm, the upper body out of the end zone if you get a big enough hit, and you talk about a hit – an all-time hit. I mean, that was just something by a young player like that. And I mean, everyone's going to be talking about that, but Greenlaw was all over the field. He had twice as many tackles yesterday as anybody else on the team. And my jaw was open. I could not believe that tackle, that play, that the Seahawks ended an inch short of the division title and I mean, I hate to say it, but I kind of feel like that game meant everything for both of those teams.
I agree. I mean, I think the separating factor for this team start to finish on both sides of the ball has been the physical nature. Obviously, defensively early on in the season, they were just dominant. But just offensively with Kittle killing people, Juszczyk opening up holes, all the running backs running hard, and then the defense, I mean, they deserve to be the one seed. It feels like the right team. Obviously, we're a little biased here, but the right team is the number one seed right now.
You know what, Guy and John, I absolutely agree. And it's funny because I think back to those 49ers Seahawks battles 6-7 years ago, and the difference in those games were the Seahawks controlled us physically. And I remember coming away from those games going, man, they just took it to us physically. That defense was physical, line of scrimmage. Their guys pounded our guys. Our receivers took shots, and the shoe was on the other foot this year, and that was great. I just remember thinking after the first half, we've got these guys. And, man, I have to say, and I'd love to go back and look at the All-22, because unless you see the All-22, you don't know what's really going on. But to be up two scores in the last 6 minutes, I thought, we got this. And the fact that the Seahawks scored, we went 3-and-out, and they got the ball back and came within an inch of beating us, I was just frustrated as heck. It felt like we took the pressure off, and I knew that we were running some nice stunts and a few blitzes up until that point, and then it seemed like we all of a sudden called off the dogs. And like I said, I mean, I was so caught up in the emotion, I can't say specifically, but all of a sudden they were – getting the ball down the field. Big plays here, big plays there, and it was just, man, that was hard to watch.
I think, look, John Harbaugh in all likelihood will be the coach of the year this year in the NFL, which is totally fine. John and I were talking about it earlier, Brent. I mean, ultimately, you've got a handful of 13-3 teams. Two of them are one seeds. One of them beat the other one in the regular season. So fine. That's, if that's how it is, that's how it is. I do think Kyle is every bit the coach of the year in the NFL, though, just because he calls plays. They've played in so many big games where it has been required that he nail multiple big play calls or else they lose. And he's done it every time, almost every time. He, to me, has been the biggest difference maker. I mean, Belichick is like in a whole world by himself. But Kyle's been the biggest difference maker in terms of a head coach, in large part because of all of that. What, when you watch him call plays, impresses you the most about it?
Well, first, let me go back to your comments. You guys are being very gracious with the John Harbaugh, and I know that John's a heck of a guy and he's a heck of a coach. And any other year, yeah, I'd give it to him. But I'm calling BS on that whole coach of the year thing, because after last year's 49ers season, if Kyle Shanahan's not coach of the year, there's people that don't know football, that aren't paying attention, and that don't understand the game. Because I love Lamar Jackson, and he's done a great job, and he's going to get his just desserts. He's going to obviously be the MVP. But that doesn't make the coach of the year. I don't think he coached any of Lamar's skills. On the other hand, I think Kyle's done a remarkable job with fit, finish, substitutions, putting guys in positions to win. Many, many young players, rookies making an impact throughout the season. And for me, that's all coaching. And I think, you know, when Kyle starts to feel his oats as a coach, he just starts dialing up plays. We saw Deebo Samuel score on a run yesterday. We've got guys doing different routes. We've got, you know, lots of different unique nuances to play calling that I think Kyle has a great command of. And so he understands putting his players in position to be successful, and Jimmy Garoppolo to go ahead and deliver the ball offensively. And then defensively, I'm sure Kyle, like most head coaches other than Belichick, like, he's probably not messing around with the defense. But to have Robert Saleh there and what he's done this year has been impressive. And so I just – it's shocking to me that Kyle Shanahan is not the leader in the clubhouse, just with the way that this season's gone. It's been impressive, and obviously I'm biased, but I just am so impressed with the things that he does, whether it's motion, whether it's matchups, whether it's, you know, getting his fullback one-on-one with a guy, or figuring out the way to move Kittle to get him singled up instead of bracketed. It's just, it's little things that make such a huge difference, and he's done it. We've had a few injuries. All those things together just impress the heck out of me, and it's been fun. And you guys can tell it's I'm excited, because it's been fun to watch this team come together. And John Lynch and Kyle, obviously I know them both, but I'm certainly not on the payroll. But it's been fun as a former player and as a fan to watch these guys do what they do.
Well, for me, you were the George Kittle of my youth. And,
yeah.
You know, anyone born in the
that's
80s.
That's a high compliment.
Well, anyone
these
that
days.
Born
that's
in the
good,
80s
yeah.
growing up, you know, it's probably more Jerry, but, you know, you can play the same position of him. But in all seriousness, when you watch George Kittle, when I was growing up, every time you guys stepped on the field, either Jerry or Steve, more than likely, was going to be the best player on the field. And one thing you've seen this year is every time the 49ers step on the field, if 85's padded up, he's the best freaking player on the field. You know, I mean, last night was him and Russ were just in a different world than everyone else. Just, I mean, how good is this guy?
It's pretty remarkable that he lasted that late in the draft. And obviously he's been a little bit of a late developer. You know, his first couple of years, he's banged up. He's learning the NFL way. But there's a couple things that he brings. And one is his speed separates him right away. But he's a 4-5 guy all day long. But he's getting more nuanced and perfected with his route running, which helps so much when you're fast already. But the thing that really separates him from every other tight end in the league right now is his acceleration. In his third step, maybe his fourth step, he's at 100%. And I don't know how many times this year guys have zeroed in on him, safeties or DBs, and all of a sudden he's going right by him. It's because he's at 100%. I don't know how he does it, but it's so darn explosive. And it's that has really separated him. So the yards after the catch, a lot of it's speed, a lot of it's want to. He's got great heart. He's very physical, but he's a lanky guy. He's 6'6". He's pretty lean. Like, you look at him, you're like, that guy's big, but he doesn't have Earl Campbell legs. He's not running over guys. And darn if he isn't running over guys. And he's great with angles, and he understands where people are on the field. And he's just, I mean, if Kittle's not going crazy on the sideline, then something's wrong. If we don't have Kittle emotion, we're in trouble.
Well, I remember him in the luxury box against the Seahawks the first time was looked like torture for him.
Well, they start calling him Jerry Jones because they showed him so much on the on the jumbotron. Did Mike Shanahan ever call end arounds for you like they do for George?
No. The funny thing is I begged him. My generation was just the coming out of the tight end position as a receiver. And I used to just rant and rave to anybody that would listen that was really that's one of our greatest mismatches. I mean, the game's become now all about matchups. And I don't know that back then it was as well understood. But, I mean, the game's changed as well because, you know, those were days where you didn't get a free release off the line. Linebackers held you all the way down the field. There was no such thing as holding or pass interference against a linebacker on a tight end. It just wasn't part of the drill. And so it was a little bit different deal. But, man, I got to tell you, he's just a fun guy to watch, and certainly he's the heartbeat of the team. And just to have him out there, it's fun. I got a chance to meet him last year, and he's just a great kid. And we've got so many – you guys can tell this, and I told this early on in the season. You can tell these guys love being around each other. Not every team is like that. Some teams have too many egos. Some teams have, hey, I'm in it for myself or my contract. And you can tell these guys all support each other. It's probably because they've been at the bottom of the barrel together, a lot of them, other than the rookies. A lot of these guys have not seen the light of day from the last couple years. And now to have all this talent flourish and the opportunity to unleash Kyle Shanahan as play calling and a healthy Jimmy G, I mean, it's a completely different mindset. And it's a fun thing to watch because you don't see it every year.
Is that something that that is just going to always be kind of a snapshot in time when your team is at this point where they're a little better than maybe the world thought they would be? Or can that, if you have the right player leadership, coach leadership, just be a characteristic of an organization?
You know, that is a heck of a question. I think in this day in free agency and contracts and guys getting paid and this, that, and the other thing, I think every year is a snapshot in time. And while I think the future is bright for the next couple years with this team, it's not going to stay that way. And so you have to take advantage of it when you have the opportunity. And taking advantage of it is winning the Super Bowl. And right now with home field advantage, you know, odds are we should be the team. So people have to come through us, through the Bay Area, through the Niners to get there. And so you just can't relax now. You have to, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, extra film work, extra time in the training room. Everybody needs to be as healthy as they can get, and everybody has to bring their A game, coaches included. And that's every bit the part of a successful run in the playoffs. And you just never know if you're going to get back and get there again. Because I promise you guys that last year's Super Bowl Rams team thought that they'd be going to the Super Bowl for the next 4 or 5 years, and they're not even in the playoffs.
You have a unique perspective because when you came to the Niners, they were kind of like a Patriot-type team, right? They'd already won a couple Super Bowls. They were really good. This team, one parallel we've used, and I just Google and research, and I mean, Walsh in his third year went 13-3, got the one seed. The catch happened a couple weeks later. Then they won the Super Bowl. But that was a team that I don't think coming into the season, we were talking to Mark Abanez about it. Like, people did thought they might be better, but it just kind of happened. Kind of like we thought the Niners would be competitive this year if Jimmy could stay healthy, maybe like a six seed. And then, boom, they're like best team in the league. And now, like you say, you just never know. You got to go all in because this might change it all. And they have a special chemistry with the group. do you think it's almost easier in the sense that despite them being the one seed, they're not really viewed as like some consistent powerhouse or anything? They've kind of snuck up on people in a way.
Yeah, I think it's great right now. And they're probably the most underappreciated one seed in a long time. And people still, I think, shake their head in disbelief and go, oh, 49ers, you know, hey, yeah, they're the one seed. But, you know, people don't give Jimmy G enough respect and what he's done this year. And I know the first month of the season, maybe he wasn't playing at a premier pace, but he still is coming back off an ACL, still getting comfortable, still getting, you know, comfortable with just his mechanics. But, you know, the second half of the season, he's been a different player, and that's so significant. I think people are starting to wake up to that fact. A lot of people don't really know who George Kittle is. Oh, that guy, he's always signaling first down and bouncing around. Now people are starting to understand. You know, people don't appreciate this defense. You know, we've gotten a lot of pressure on people the first half of the season. That was a big story. And then, you know, we had a few key injuries. You know, we're missing Alexander, missing D Ford. And, you know, the dynamics aren't exactly the same. I thought the guys brought a lot more pressure yesterday, maybe not consistently throughout the game, but I think we're going to see guys rested up and ready to go for the playoffs. And that's going to be a differentiator. So people don't really know. There's not an Antonio Brown type of player on this team, right? There's not a Tom Brady, or there's not a Drew Brees where everybody points to and they go, oh, well, Niners, you know, who do you know?
Sherman would be the guy, but that's based on what he did in Seattle, not here, right?
Well, that's true. He's actually had a heck of a year.
Yeah, he has.
If you look at it, I mean, that old dog could still do some tricks, I promise you. And I think that he loves being under the radar, too. It's one of the benefits come this time of year. But you know, the thing that I want to say it scares me, but it freaks me out a little bit, is the way that I figure this playoff thing is going to go. Seattle's going to be back in town in 2 weeks. And, man, you guys play – you know this. You play a third game against division opponent in – literally anything can happen. And there's no surprises. Both teams know each other. Seahawks will be a little bit more healthied up. I hate that matchup for us. And then
why?
Once we, you know what? Cause I just think Pete Carroll has a great way with that team. And I've counted these guys out so many darn times and they're still standing and it just drives me crazy. But I think we'll get by them, and then I think we're going to have the Saints waiting for us to come on in. And that's – me, look at that. Those are two tough home games again. Now, we've done it this year, but here come the Seahawks, here come the Saints, and they ain't messing around. And so we're going to have to be our best. If we're going to be in the Super Bowl this year, we're going to earn it. I think we are going to be, but, man, it's not like we're going to have any you know, walkover games in the first round or two.
No, it's not supposed to be easy, but this feels particularly hard.
Man, it does. Just the way that the seedings worked out.
I mean, and exhausting. By the way, do you think, just listening to you talk, do you think Jimmy can be an MVP quarterback?
So I certainly think he has the capabilities. And you guys know this. What you have to have is you have to have other assets. And the big thing this year was we saw George Kittle emerge last year, and George Kittle's been a beast this year. But we had to have other people step up. And when we traded for Emmanuel Sanders, that actually separated our team from everybody else because people had to account for Emmanuel. Now, he hasn't always turned in a monster game, but he's going to always turn in the fact that people have to account for him. And I think – a lot of people don't understand the accounting side of the equation when you're talking about defense. So what does that do? That singles up Deebo Samuel, who has become a physical presence as a rookie. What a heck of a draft pick he looks like right now. And he's, you know, from games 10 to 16, the guy's just been a stud. And you can see what the confidence has done with him gaining confidence week in and week out. He is such a different player than he was early on in the season. So if you have the weapons like that, and you have Raheem Mostert, who, I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of the season, you know, I'm a big Tevin Coleman guy. I watched him a lot with the Falcons. I'm like, God, this guy's a stud. And I saw Breda play last year and he was a stud too. And like, man, they just keep putting guys in there. And that speaks the offensive line. They've been consistent. We've been banged up a little bit this year. But you start putting all those things together, and yeah, Jimmy G can be a MVP in the next couple of years. He has the capabilities. Had they turned him loose for throwing the ball 40 times a game? No, because we got a run game. But, you know, these other teams that, that let their quarterbacks, you know, throw 35, 45 times a game, I don't know that that's going to ever be Kyle with this line and with this group of running backs. But that doesn't mean he can't win the MVP.
You get a chance to see the clip of Joe Staley running off the field in tears?
Didn't. Love it. Love Joe, man. Old school guy. And I get it, because I think one thing that you don't really get when you're a younger player or even in the middle of your career, you think every guy thinks he's going to play forever, which sounds crazy, but it's true. Every guy thinks he's going to play forever. And I think the older you get and the more injuries you deal with, all of a sudden you start to realize, wow, I'm mortal. This, you never know when your last ride is going to be. And I think probably the emotion of that and the injuries and the fact that he's been on one of the worst teams in the NFL for the last 5 years probably all came together. And you, it's so darn tough. You just never know. And so I think it was all spilling over into the emotion and just saying, hey, it's great to be back here. Didn't know that I'd ever be here again.
It's like the football gods, you know, threw the Niners a bone last night to stop them on that half-inch line.
I mean, holy crap. I still can't believe that tackle.
Oh, my God. There's not a soul in a 60-mile radius around here that thought they were going to win. I mean, I didn't. How could you? You know, they were driving. It was over. And then it wasn't.
It was over. That was a legendary tackle. And I know everyone's talking about the bun stop. And it was very, very similar to get a perfect hit up high and drive the guy back. I mean, there was no momentum going forward. And what a great play by a great young player. And you think that play could be the difference between this team going to the Super Bowl or going to Philadelphia and catching the Eagles in a bad weather game. And, man, I'm glad we're not doing that crap.
Sounds miserable. By the way, hopefully January 16th, you're up there on the stage with Matt, and you're talking about the NFC Championship game around the corner.
I mean, I can hardly wait. That's my plan, fellas.
Just one win away. I mean, it's not that far. Just one win away.
Yeah, it's just one win.
60 minutes.
There we go.
All right, Brent, good to talk to you, man.
Thanks, Brent. Appreciate it.
Fellas, it was fun. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There he was, John, Brent Jones. Kyle Shanahan, Coach of the Year. Jimmy G, future MVP. He uses we. I love it, as he has the right to. That's pretty cool.
Would you ever use we in a position if you become a team play-by-play guy?
I don't think so.
You would not use we?
That
ingrained you the community.
I don't think so.
The difference is that Brett Jones grew up here. Only played here. Like, to me, there's no, I never feel like when a former player, especially if that's the only franchise they ever play, should use we, right?
Yeah. You played for the team, you can say we. You put on the uniform.
What about diehard fans?
That's okay too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's we. It's a part of the community. But it is free advertising for the team when you just keep talking about them.
Yeah.
They're not paying you to do it. You're actually paying them to attend their shit. It's genius. You know? I was thinking about this the other day. Teams want more people to say we.
Well, of course. Teams want their broadcasters to say we, probably.
Yeah. You'll be saying it one day. It might not even be.
I'm not a we guy.
It might not be a choice, though, by, you know, if this happens. Like, what if you fill it? What if you take over Greg Papa? Like, when is Greg Papa saying we? In 3 years?
He's calling defenses already, so he might be Robert Saleh's replacement.
That is true.
How about Derek Papa making us a Mayoko song for KNBR on Monday?
It was pretty good. You know, it shows Acapella. You that I think it's clear that Derek has just changed his allegiance. He's a diehard Niner guy now. You know, Oakland left him. You know, the Raiders left. The A's, we think, are buying some land. I still doubt that they're going to be around. They'll be gone here soon. And
I don't think they're leaving.
You think they'll make it?
A's? Yeah, I don't think they're leaving.
I can't. I mean, maybe they'll just go under if they stay. I don't think it's financially feasible for them to stay. But you're right. I mean, if they get sold this land, maybe they do it. I still have my reservations that they're ever going to wreck this.
Well, I'm not saying I don't have reservations. I'm just saying, what are they going to do? End up in Portland?
Well, I think baseball moves them to Portland or Vegas.
I don't think they're doing
that. I think Vegas is the move, actually. And it's Mark Davis's worst memory because he hates the A's and they're just his fucking paper. That's my guess. Do you think they could financially survive here and make money? Because I don't.
Yeah, I mean, their plan is to build hotels and stuff.
In the 66 house,
maybe not hotels, but like housing, rental properties and office buildings and that kind of thing. Yeah, most teams try to do.
At 66 and Hagenberger, though.
No, out by the water.
Oh, I thought they were buying the
land. Well, I think they want to do both. They want to buy that land too, so they can monetize that.
I think they did. You know, it got confirmed they get that.
They got half of that, but then they also want to do some of that stuff out in Jack London.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think they actually own some of that already. They've got office space out there that they own, and they're et cetera, et cetera. But
maybe I'm underestimating the power of Oakland.
Sorry, I'm watching the bowl game here. Two guys ran into each other.
He got taken out. Okay.
All right. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. Godspeed. See you.